Hey, you want that to go?
It's time for some takeouts, and today, of course, Black Friday, people watching the retailers closely. We're joined right now by Louise Story from D.C. Louise, you're going to be shopping today?
I'll be a little.
And also Julie Mason's in D.C. as well, and Femi Oke is at the Walmart at Green Acres Shopping Mall on Long Island, New York. Good morning, Femi.
Good morning. Hello there, everybody.
What does it look like there? Are there crowds?
Yes, and then some. If you think of a major rock concert or a major event, we have lines snaking all the way around the car parking lot. And Walmart is absolutely full right now, so there are barriers stopping people from getting in so the shoppers in there can get their shopping and get out.
So they're keeping people out?
Because the store is absolutely full. And when I asked one of the security guys back here, I said, well, how many people do you estimate are in there? And he just looked at me and ironically said, enough.
So you also talked to Tony New. He's one of the shoppers that's in line there.
Crazy out here. No, it seems like there's a lot more than last year. Seems like because of the economy, a lot more people are getting up early to catch the sales.
Oh, so maybe it is a little bit more busy than last year. Any idea, Femi, what people are mostly shopping for? Is there a common thread?
People came very early to get things like the big screen television, Celeste, the laptops, lots of the computers, and all of that, all of those kind of goods went really, really early. And so Tony was in line at 3:30 in the morning. He'd been waiting for a couple of hours. And by about 4 a.m., the security guards had come around and said, listen, the TVs are gone, the laptops are gone. And he just walked off in disgust, went to another store.
Oh, poor Tony. Okay, thanks, Femi. You stay safe there at a Walmart Green Acres Shopping Mall.
So, Louise Story, Black Friday may have a new name come next week with the announcement by Dubai World, the main investment arm of the Emirate of Dubai, that they want to postpone or take a six-month pause in their repayment of $60 billion of debt. And I'm wondering, who holds this debt? It must be banks all over the world.
That's right. So this has been on people's radar screen that we had problems in Dubai for a few months, but no one thought they were serious enough to call for the banks to disclose what they were holding. So we haven't had any disclosure about who has this debt, which I think is leading to a bit of the panic we saw. You know, yesterday we saw the FTSE in London drop significantly. We saw the German stock index drop. You know, today we're seeing Dow futures are down. So it is creating a bit of a panic because no one really knows where this exposure is.
And there's a Muslim holiday that's just ending. Dubai
right.
says it's not going to give any more information until next week. Basically, traders are going to have to... They're going to have to wait to digest this, which is actually fears will multiply in those kinds of situations, right?
But the thing to keep in mind is that Dubai is different from a lot of the rest of the Middle East because the rest of the Middle East, you know, generally has huge oil reserves. Dubai actually has no oil, okay? And its expansion in the last few years was driven by this feeling that it could become a business capital and a vacation capital for the oil-rich countries next door as well as the rest of the world. But they don't have oil, and so they built themselves up with credit. They are definitely a result of the easy credit we had going, and so you can look at this as another result of the financial crisis. And what it's showing us is that it's oil, the oil-rich neighbors of Dubai may not step in to save it, which everyone kind of thought they might.
That's a whole interesting set of things to be watching there. You know, it's ironic. Dubai gets tons and tons of credit when these small business people we were just talking to on the program had to finance their small businesses themselves in the middle of this recession. Louise Story, thanks so much. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Louise Story, Wall Street and finance reporter for our partner, The New York Times.
So Femi is worried about security at the Walmart where she is staked out there. But we have Julie Mason, a White House correspondent for The Washington Examiner, with us, joining us from D.C. And they're talking about security of a different level there in Washington, D.C., right? They're talking about the President Obama's first state dinner, which was crashed by two possible reality show celebrities. And is the Secret Service on the hook here? Is that who everyone is looking to blame for this?
Yeah, and it looks like, you know, they really didn't follow their own procedures on that, Celeste. It's unclear how these people got in. They must have piggybacked in behind someone else or snuck in when the service's attention was diverted. But somehow these two, like, reality show wannabes made it into the White House state dinner.
And the only statement I've seen from the Secret Service so far is that, A, they're embarrassed, and, B, that they were still screened, that even though they got in and they weren't supposed to, they went through metal detectors, they were screened, so it was still safe. Is that all that we're hearing?
Right. that's what they're saying, is that their procedures were not followed, but that the Obamas were not in danger, which means, in Secret Service code speak, it means that these people did go through the metal detectors. They didn't have any weapons on them, which is the number one top priority of the Secret Service, making sure no one gets in with weapons. I mean, not so much checking the list, although they're supposed to be doing that too. And so it's all under investigation. It's a big mess. It's a real embarrassment for the Secret Service, which is tough because they work really hard and they do a really good job every day. So this is a real embarrassment for them.
And this comes at a time that we're hearing that there's actually been a 400% increase in threats against the White House since George Bush's administration, correct?
Right. Obama came in with an extremely high threat level. There were just so many threats against him. The Secret Service says that's leveled off a little bit, and now he's sort of at the levels of Clinton and Bush during their presidencies. But around the time of his inauguration, there was a huge spike in threats against the president. So, and when you're around the president all the time, you're extremely aware of how tight the security is.
Julie, is it possible that this relates to that kind of weird perimeter issue at the White House, where there's one security that's in charge of this sort of overall perimeter, but that as you get inside these various perimeters, it's different security, and if people are in there, they're presumed to be safe?
Right, that's exactly right. Once you're in, they're watching you, but they're not checking you. So these people just acted like partygoers, so they didn't raise any red flags.
And although they do background checks usually, right?
Right, they do, but that's way ahead of the party. That would be like, you know, a few weeks out. So if these people were never checked against the list, which it looks like their names were not checked against the list, once they're in, they're in.
Okay, Julie Mason's the White House correspondent for the Washington Examiner. Join us for D.C. Thanks so much.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.